Blog Talk Radio.
The guy who's sitting in prison is completely innocent.
In 2006, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman was convicted of bribery. However, many of America's leading judicial experts, including prosecutors, judges, and lawmakers, now claim that he's completely innocent and the victim of a political conspiracy by his rivals.
I believe that his conviction and sentence represent a travesty of justice.
This is one of the most egregious miscarriages of justice that I've encountered.
Legal experts now accuse the federal officials in this case of a staggering array of judicial abuses and downright corruption.
This is a story of really astonishing political corruption. The political corruption is inside the U.S. Department of Justice.
The people who orchestrated his prosecution include some of the most notorious names in politics.
Jack Abramoff, every single time I ever saw him, one name came out of his mouth. Karl Rove, Karl Rove, Karl Rove.
A Republican lawyer from Alabama has apparently sworn under oath that Karl Rove pushed the Justice Department to bring political corruption charges against Mr. Siegelman.
Many of the events surrounding the Siegelman case have been covered by the New York Times, Harper's, CNN, and MSNBC. It was featured on the cover of Time magazine and the lead segment for 60 Minutes.
Is Don Siegelman in prison because he's a criminal or because he belonged to the wrong political party in Alabama?
Many Republicans have also come forward in his defense.
Why are there so many Republicans that are getting behind this Don Siegelman, who is a Democrat?
Don Siegelman was a victim because they could not beat him fairly. They beat him with corruption in the court system.
My case is extremely similar to Governor Siegelman. We both had rabid Republican prosecutors going after folks for political reasons, which is something we don't do in the United States of America.
Conservative writer and Pulitzer Prize winner George Will and John McCain's former chief of staff.
Grant Woods is the former Republican Attorney General of Arizona.
I haven't seen a case with this many red flags on it that pointed towards a real injustice being done.
I knew Don Siegelman, and he never would have taken a bribe. Don was incorruptible. But today, Don Siegelman is sitting in prison, and he's done nothing wrong. He was politically assassinated by these corrupt people who couldn't beat him any other way. It's like they were killing Atticus Finch.
Now, 113 former state's attorneys general, both Democrat and Republican, have signed a petition protesting Don Siegelman's malicious prosecution and seek to overturn his wrongful conviction. This is the first time in history that so many influential Americans have come forward to publicly denounce the deliberate injustice directed at one man. It all started just after winning his first term as governor.
The investigation into Governor Siegelman began 12 weeks after he took office. The Attorney General, Bill Pryor, subpoenaed Governor Siegelman's financial records.
Pryor's political advisor at the time was Karl Rove.
When people were still figuring out how to work the phone system in the governor's office, they were already investigating. And it never stopped for the next 6 years.
After relentlessly investigating Governor Siegelman, his family, and staff throughout his entire first term, Pryor found nothing. Then, on his re-election night, like a page out of Bush v. Gore, CBS, NBC, and CNN all called the governor's race in favor of Siegelman. Mysteriously, in the middle of the night, a computer glitch shifted 6,000 votes from Governor Siegelman's column to his rival, Bob Riley. Siegelman supporters demanded a recount. However, Bill Pryor, the same attorney general investigating the governor, immediately threatened to arrest anyone if they were to initiate a recount.
Had the Republican district attorney in Baldwin County not threatened to put everybody in jail if they attempted to count those votes, we would have already had the votes hand-counted in Baldwin County.
As those ballots remained sealed and uncounted, Bob Riley was declared the winner. Bill Pryor and Bob Riley, both Karl Rove clients, had won the day. There's much more about this event that remains undisclosed, and we want to reveal it in our documentary. Former Rove colleague and Republican whistleblower Jill Simpson would later testify before Congress that for years, Karl Rove had carried out a secret campaign to destroy Siegelman. More importantly, she also testified that longtime Roe colleague and Republican consultant Bill Canary once told her that his girls would take care of Siegelman. Then, just after announcing his candidacy for governor, one of Bill Canary's girls, federal prosecutor Alice Martin, indicted the former governor on fraud charges. Judge U.W. Clement presided over the case.
As it turned out, there was absolutely no basis to the charge. It was the most unfounded indictment that I saw in my nearly 30 years on the federal bench.
Not long after that case was thrown out, the former Democratic governor was indicted again, this time by the other one of Bill Canary's girls.
The U.S. attorney was Laura Canary, and on the day that she raised her hand to become U.S. attorney, at that moment, her husband was being paid by one of Governor Siegelman's announced opponents for governor and by the Attorney General, Bill Pryor, who initiated the investigation in the first place.
Incredibly, Laura Canary, the prosecutor indicting him for bribery, was married to Bill Canary, the campaign manager of Don Siegelman's opponent. Then, even more surprising, the so-called bribe was simply a transparent donation to a lottery education fund with no personal benefit to then-Governor Siegelman.
It's the first time in American jurisprudence that this theory of bribery was used.
Governor Siegelman received no personal benefit whatsoever from that contribution.
After 8 months, Laura Canary claimed to have recused herself, although we can prove that's not true. Ostensibly, she handed the case over to her assistants, including Stephen Faga.
The United States tried as best it could to put the truth in front of them.
60 Minutes would later prove that Faga was not telling the truth. They found that Faga and the other prosecutors literally scripted the testimony of their key witness, Nick Bailey.
They made him write his proposed testimony over and over just to get his story straight.
Prosecutors then withheld important evidence that could have also exonerated the former governor.
Then his notes, by law, should have been turned over to the defense.
The CBS show explained how Bailey's story was logistically impossible to have occurred, and prosecutors knew it all along.
The check was cut days after that meeting. There was no way possible for Siegelman to have walked out of that meeting with a check in his hand.
That would seem like a problem with the prosecution's
case. It's a huge problem.
We have prosecutors who should be in jail today.
Should the prosecutors be in jail? They brought trumped up false charges to deprive somebody of their liberty. Yes, they should be in jail.
This time, to make sure trumped up charges would stick in court, prosecutors went judge shopping. Enter Judge Mark Fuller.
And you're not going to believe this, but somehow we end up with Mark Fuller as the judge in the Siegelman case. Years before, Governor Siegelman had found that Mark Fuller had misappropriated retirement system money. This was all highly publicized, and while no charges were brought, it was very embarrassing. But now he's the judge in the Siegelman case, so he's got the perfect opportunity for payback.
Judge Fuller also had a very big secret to hide, one that still has not been fully disclosed. He owned a side business called Doss Aviation that previously listed its address at Fuller's courthouse chambers. In the middle of the trial, and unknown to Siegelman's defense, Doss Aviation was issued a government contract worth over $178 million. A contract that could have easily been influenced by the White House. As you might imagine, Judge Fuller's rulings and jury instructions overwhelmingly favor the prosecution, and have been considered by judicial experts as completely unfair. If the name Mark Fuller sounds familiar, that's because he's been mentioned in the media quite a lot these days.
What's your name? Caitlin Fuller. Okay, she needs an ambulance. I'm sending a police. They're in a domestic fight now at the Ritz-Carlton.
That panic-stricken call to 911 came from Kelly Fuller, the wife of Judge Mark Fuller. After his arrest, Atlanta police stated that Fuller had dragged his wife by the hair, and as you can hear in the 911 call, she was beaten repeatedly. At this point, you may wonder why the appeals process hasn't stopped this madness. Well, remember Roe client and Alabama Attorney General Bill Pryor? After years of continuously investigating Don Siegelman, the Bush White House appointed him to none other than the U.S. 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, where Siegelman's case is being considered. As the former governor remains in prison, the all-Republican, three-judge appeals court panel reviewing his case has delayed hearings over and over again without explanation. The next hearing date has been pushed to sometime beyond January 2015. Just after Republican whistleblower Jill Simpson came forward, her house was suspiciously burned down. On the day 60 Minutes aired the Siegelman story, the CBS affiliate in Huntsville, Alabama, WHNT, simply blacked the segment out. The story was not seen in northern Alabama during the regular Sunday 7 p.m. time slot.
This story has to be told because today, Don Siegelman is not only destroyed financially, personally, and politically, Don Siegelman is sitting in prison. He is in federal prison simply because a group of very corrupt and very powerful people wanted to get rid of him, and we can't let them get away with it.
In 2007, Karl Rove simply ignored his subpoena to testify before the House Judiciary Committee investigating the Siegelman case, stating that he was immune to a subpoena. He has refused to testify under oath. Rove was later questioned by George Stephanopoulos on ABC's This Week.
But to be clear, you did not contact the Justice Department about this case?
I'm going to simply say what I've said before, which is I found out about Don Siegelman's investigation and indictment by reading about it in the newspaper.
But that's not a denial.
In this episode of Bringing Voices to Power, I will talk with Kyle Campbell. Kyle is now the, and I'll also talk with Patrick Fitzgerald. Kyle is now the Deputy National Membership Director for College Democrats of America, which he will hold until July. Kyle has been privileged to work with college Democrats from across the South in Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, Florida, the Carolinas, and Mississippi. Mr. Campbell believes that in a region where Democrats once dominated, college students can and must play a vital role in reestablishing our party, and he's glad to be a part of all of that. He graduated from Bob Jones High School and now studies political science at the University of Alabama. We will also be joined by Patrick Fitzgerald, who used to work in the Alabama Congressman Terry Sewell's office. He has been active and held positions in University of Alabama's SGA for the last 3 years. He finished out his last term as senator a few weeks ago, where they passed the resolution calling for Dunn's freedom on behalf of University of Alabama Students Body. He served as vice president of UA College Democrats and as the director of membership for the statewide chapter of College Democrats. He studies marketing with a minor in political science and Italian. He's a 2013 graduate of Sparkman High School and graduate of University of Alabama. And Patrick currently works under the Dean of Students at the University of Alabama. His specialization in the office is in-state recruitment, especially under the Boys State Program. Okay, gentlemen, I want Kyle to correct me on some of that intro. Give us your current position that you're in, and then I want Patrick to do the same.
Well, good afternoon, Marcus. Thank you for having me on the show. My current position is right. Deputy National Membership Director for the College Democrats of America, and as of yesterday, I was elected Executive Director of the University of Alabama College Democrats.
Oh, that's great. Okay, we have Kyle on?
Yes, do you have me on here? Patrick.
Okay. Hello? Okay, go ahead. Tell us what your current position is.
Yeah, my current position, I yesterday was reelected to Vice President of College Democrats, the University of Alabama chapter, and then a couple weeks back we had a statewide convention and well, directors of membership, so trying to bring together all the different branches for different events and days of action now for this next year.
Okay, that's great also. And I'm very proud of what you guys are doing. I was told about a mutual friend about the work that you guys are doing, and I looked at it and I said, man, it gives some hope to Democrats in this state considering the current sort of crisis, in-party crisis we have going on now. And parties sometimes go through these type of crises, but it's just great to see the younger generation out there still working in the grassroots, and the future looks bright. Now, could y'all tell us a little bit about how this resolution came about?
Sure. You know, it's one of those things that, Kyle Atwood felt really passionate about, the injustice that's been getting pitched to Don Siegelman over the last few years. And it was a matter of, my turf was about to end, and time had just kind of crept up on us. And so we said, it's about time that we put this up and really wanted to spark up, because it's been a while since Don's been in the media, unfortunately. And, that's the kind of thing that really makes this thing get back up, is whenever you see the case get brought back in some kind of media outlet, or trying to get it back up, or trying to, inform more people either on the campus or being able to take this bill now that we passed to other SGAs across the state, and really making sure that they understand everything that's happened. And so, with the amount of time that we had, we said, we got one session left, let's try and get it through, and we did. So I'm hoping now that we can take it to other SGAs, like I said before, and really help them understand and really put some pressure on some of the other folks, some of the high-ranking officials, maybe even in some of these universities, to call for Siegelman's freedom as well.
And Governor Siegelman was, of course, SGA president at the University of Alabama, so he's got a special place here in our student government. But the first time I heard about this case was a couple weeks before a conference that I attended in Arizona called Netroots Nation, where I met Pam Miles. And I actually had the opportunity to hear from Governor Siegelman on the phone. He called into the conference and gave everybody his greetings. And, we watched the pre-screen documentary, or the preview to the documentary, and we're really excited to get that going. And, of course, as soon as the film is finished, we'd love to, College Democrats help with screening and like that throughout the state.
Okay. I just want to say one of my early mentors was Pam Miles. I love Pam Miles. She's one of my, when I first got into politics, she's the one who lit the fire, the one who encouraged me to really go out there and to be active. And I just want to give her a shout out, because she was one of those early mentors that got me deeply involved into politics, and I've had some great success with it and able to make some changes and bring a lot of things to light, just like this injustice with that happened to former Governor Don Siegelman. And we've had a few previous shows, and what I get from it all is, how can they use Bailey's testimony? I mean, rewrite your testimony over 37 times. It clearly shows they were trying to get the wording right, and either he could have told what happened and let it stand like that. It seemed like they crafted exactly what they wanted to get a conviction that was basically, like UW Kimlin said, they had lowered the bar almost to the ground. And so what would you encourage other student government associations around the country to do? How can they contact you guys? And do you have a website, or do you have the resolution online where other SGAs can sign it? And how often does the Nationwide Student Government Association meet?
Well, they've got Nationwide Student Government Association. It's a couple of different branches that they've got. And the Nationwide, unfortunately, the Nationwide Student Government Association, University of Alabama, is not a member of, which I haven't really understood for the longest time. But I do know folks that are in SGAs at schools that are represented there, and I'm going to try and have them there on behalf of us and see if they might be able to pass something there at their annual symposium, when they meet up in Washington. I believe that's going to be this summer, whenever that happens. All of the newly elected officials there from other schools. And essentially, that's one of the things that we want to do, is try and really inform people, like we said, across the state. So we've got a list of the SGA presidents, vice presidents, et cetera, from all these schools across Alabama. Do we need to make sure to get this bill in their hands? And, some people will act on it, some people won't. And the people that won't act on it, give it to their college Democrats chapter. And if they don't have a college Democrats chapter, we can't do to organize a college Democrats chapter and make sure that, you know, the left at other schools is being heard. And that's one of those things that we really want to do. Not only that, but we want to incorporate part of this into Higher Ed Day, wherever we have all of the colleges converge in Montgomery to start talking about higher education. I mean, one of the big issues in higher education is affordability, and one of the reasons why college has been so expensive for in-state students that are currently in school is because we didn't have an education lottery for Alabamian kids to be able to have practically debt-free and tuition-free schooling. And if you really want to look more into that aspect of it, I think you could really light a fire under people. What do you think?
Yes, you can, because we're here in Alabama. We're surrounded by lotteries that are paying for our bordering states' education. So why not here?
And I can tell you that when I turned 18, you know, up in Huntsville, took the quick drive up to Tennessee and bought a lottery ticket and lost and helped funded their education system. And I sure would have liked to be able to go to a gas station down the street and help out some folks that are in college with me right now, then have to go support the education system of Tennessee or Georgia or Florida.
That's totally correct. Like I worked at Alabama A&M University for 10 years, and I can tell you a few times on my lunch break, I definitely took me a trip up there, and I have actually won some money a few times. You know, do a little dollar scratch off or something and win up $75. I mean, but to do that and to fund education to make sure that the future generations are taken care of is exactly what I see what's wrong with the Alabama Republican Party. It seems like they're doing everything they can to stunt, slow down, and even crash education. So I can understand why Siegelman was very dangerous to them, but he was targeted not just simply because he was a significant threat to the population and to the political process of Alabama. They saw him as a danger nationwide because here's a popular Democratic governor being elected here in Alabama. I mean, that was really scary for them, and I think that's what led them to corrupt justice at the Justice Department. They had to go in and do something totally absurd to get him convicted because he was a danger to the whole entire Republican Party, and that's why I want Democrats, and I've said it on the show before, okay, Democrats, you can come out of your corners now. You can stop hiding. It's time for us to rally around Governor Siegelman, especially at a time when we know one of the things that Karl Rove paid the Republican operative, Jill Simpson, to do was to get some type of marital infidelity and naked pictures of Governor Siegelman. They spent millions and millions of dollars, and they got nothing because he just like they said he done was incorruptible. But now look at what type of governor we got in office right now. So Democrats, come on out of your corners. You know, the bell is rang. It's time to get back into the fight.
And the Republicans in 2010, you know, Mike Hubbard and all his bunch ran on you know, partially on the Governor Siegelman trial and partially on, you know, a couple other things with Victor Land and everything like that. And they ran on, let's get these corrupt Democrats out of office. And now you look at three of the four, you know, state leaders of any of the branches, the governor, the Speaker of the House, and the Chief Justice, all three are at least being investigated, if not tried, for ethics violations. So, I mean, you know, they ran on this promise to sweep out corruption, and they must have just left their broom at home. There's no way that they can make that argument again in 2018, and Democrats really need to hit the ground running with that message.
That's also true, and I don't want to leave out the corrupt attorney general. He's also corrupt up to his neck as well. And just as I had Laurel Barron on the show, and just as Laurel Barron stated, I mean, he carried on an infamous relationship with one of his aides, and she's still in his office.
Yeah.
So his hands is kind of tied behind his back. The whole system, that whole super majority in Montgomery
is junk. It's totally junk. They sold a bad bill of goods, hiding behind guns and God, and we find out that they really haven't been practicing what they've been preaching.
They have been about the guns now. Don't get me wrong. They've been practicing what they've been preaching about the guns.
Because now in Alabama, you know, you can take them into churches, and I think you can have a unregistered gun in your car.
Right. So they definitely been good on that. But no, I mean, yeah, I mean, you look at it, it's you look down the line in Montgomery, and it's harder to find somebody without some kind of scandal in Montgomery. I mean, honestly, the only statewide elected official I can think of right now, or the main ones, would be Jim Ziegler. I mean, he's got his own issues politically, no doubt. But I mean, it's kind of sad when you can only think of one elected official without a tarnishing kind of scandal that's either come out or just waiting to come out that you know about. And I mean, you look also too, well, what you said earlier with the Republican Party, the lack of interest, it almost seems, to rebuild public education in Alabama. And it's almost in a way, like you said, trying to almost attack public education, whether it be denying a lottery every time we can, whether it be even now taking money from the Education Trust Fund and throwing it to build prison. I mean, something like that is just so inconceivable. And if you want to look at every Republican reform that's been put up, it's always been about opening the door to charter schools. And, you know, charter schools have worked in some states, but we know good and well in Alabama, the only thing charter schools are going to do is open up a door for some of their donors, open up the door for some of their friends to open up their own schools, get funds, make profits, and more deeply segregate the school system. I mean, that's exactly what being Alabama, and I think you're right. I mean, Democrats need to look around and say, sure, they got a supermajority right now, but if we don't start taking seats back now, when they're shooting themselves in the leg this bad, then when?
Yeah, we need to do that, and it starts with at the grassroots, and it starts with the things like you guys are doing to bring back the glory days. And we can bring back those glory days because we basically got everybody that was here when Siegelman was in office. We just need to come together under this common purpose of gaining done his freedom, and main thing is registering and motivating voters at the grassroots level.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna ask you guys about how did the student body? What are some of the things the student body say about this resolution? What's some of the feedback you've been getting from the student body there at the University of Alabama?
Well, you know, in the initial part, you know, we threw it up in the legislature, you know, it's barely any kind of pushback. It's one of those things where a lot of students, and I guess it's kind of a separation of time for people to really sit back and look at some of the facts, and that's what I did. Because at first, when I talked to people about it, and I said, look, I'm wanting to put up, you know, from my colleagues in the Senate, just initially, like, hey, I want to put something up, you know, about Don Siegelman. And at first they were like, you know, Don Siegelman, he's definitely in prison on corruption charges on Friday, everything like that. And I said, look, no, I'm going to send you a packet. I'm going to send you some of the information on Don in this case. And everybody that read that packet really understood the situation and was just as mad about it as I was. And so what I've seen is whenever you let people know what actually happened, they really, really, really do change. They'll pull a 180 and go from hating Siegelman just like their mom and dad told them to versus really trying to see him free. And I think that it's one of those things where if you'd have had a conversation like this in, let's just say, the late 2000s, things would have still been so politically ostracized with Siegelman's case. It had been so politically polarizing still. But now that it's gotten time to really sit down and settle, people can really now look at it away from a partisan view and really look at somebody who's had a great injustice done to him, especially with the 113 state attorneys general, both Republican and Democrat, calling for his freedom.
Yes, that's true. And one of the top, the person that the Republicans turn to, sort of the granddaddy mind of the party, is George Will. He's the, probably one of the, if you got to name the top Republicans in the country as far as the whole party is concerned, one of those top three would be George Will. And George Will, a Republican, has said that this case is a great injustice. But what we have is we got a lot of Alabama politicians just running out of control. And you are correct when you said the more people know about this case, the more they see the injustice in it. And we even had a local TV station that like they said on here, aired 60 Minutes, and that's the TV station that's in here in my area, the North Tennessee Valley. And you guys know this because y'all from the North Alabama Tennessee Valley, Channel 19 blacked it out. They came back and aired it on another night once people complained. But it's, and you can look at the Alabama papers. I mean, they're covering this Bentley scandal, which has got a bunch of soap opera stuff in it. But what they need to be covering is what happened to Governor Don Sigelman. That's what really need to be covered. But I think that they're shying away from this here in Alabama and also in the Justice Department. Is like Don said, once they uncover it and really look at it and expose it and tell the people what it is, it's going to look bad for the Justice Department, but how else is it going to get any better? You've got to clean that thing up. You can't cover this case up because it's going to make you look so bad. You've got to reveal what happened, and there's got to be some justice done in Don's favor because of all these corrupt politicians.
Oh, no, I agree, and that's one of the things that's so wild to me. You know, I'm a proud Democrat, but one of the things that's just been so mind-boggling to me is how, you know, we've had Obama in office for, you know, pretty much the last 8 years now, and I just don't know how Don Sigelman has still not yet gotten a pardon. That's the one thing that puzzles me so much about all of this.
Well, we're on the same page, and from previous shows last year, before Eric Holder got out. Now, when Eric Holder came to Alabama A&M University, I was standing on the corner protesting. I was protesting because he has not freed Don Sigelman, and I was off that day, but I had someone come up to me and be like, "Hey, you're not worried about you're going to get in trouble?" We were protesting, and at the time I was employed there, but, you know, I wasn't worried about that. But I didn't think Holder, when he left, I think that's a mark on his record. I can't see him as one of the greats because of the Sigelman case. I mean, he was good. Mm-hmm. He did a whole lot of good. And I tell people this, I'm going to say the same thing about Obama. You know, he's going to be one of the greats, but the thing that's going to stop him from truly being great is he didn't fix the Don Sigelman issue, if he doesn't fix it before he gets out.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. I mean, it's tough to say that because, I mean, you know, how much Barack's done for the country. I mean, coming in at nearly 11% unemployment, losing 900,000 jobs a month, and now where we are as a country, I mean, it's just apples and oranges the way that we used to intervene foreign-wise and how we do now. I mean, it's apples and oranges on that. But at the same time, to me, it is going to have that kind of shadow, and it is going to have that stain on the administration if he doesn't do something like that for Alabama, just to let us see something. Because if anything, if nothing comes of it, it's just kind of a reiteration about how the national party has abandoned us a long, long time ago.
Yeah,
well, I'm holding out hope personally for after November, after the election. You know, most presidents make their pardons in that lame duck period, but you know, it really probably should have been done. I mean, if you were going to wait till after an election in 2012, when you know there's no way 4 years later people would be running on that against it or anything. And to tell you the truth, I mean, with light brought to this issue, I don't think it would hurt any particular nominee of the Democratic Party. So.
you know, I think if it's going to happen, it's going to happen then. And, you know, of course, it's better then than not at all. But I would have liked to see it happen earlier as well.
Yeah, that's the standard that I held Eric Holder to. It's the standard that I'm holding Barack Obama to. And it's the standard I'm holding Loretta Lynch to. Because the injustice is so terrible and so obvious that you would think somebody would have to do something. But the other part of this is, that going back to what Doug said, it is going to expose something very rotten in the United States Justice Department that extended all the way to the White House. You have people, George Bush's brain, Karl Rove, been referred to as George Bush's brain. So if the brain of the president is out here perverting justice, what does it do to the image of the United States? So that's why I'm saying that they've made Dunn a sacrificial lamb to keep this as it is. But to be a great nation, we have got to go ahead and fix it. We will be even greater by fixing it than we are by continually hiding it. What happened?
Well, I think there are several thousand sacrificial lambs that are victims of the Bush administration's bad decisions, but Don Siegelman is certainly one of them, and it is a shame that the way that in order to uphold, and that's what I think it is, to tell you the truth, in terms of what the Justice Department is doing, to try to uphold their institutional integrity, or at least the appearance of institutional integrity, this isn't being looked into. It's the kind of thing where you've done something wrong in the past, you just try to do good things now, but if you don't rectify what you've already done, you can never be what you should be.
Yeah, and it's going to be hard to do that with another thing that was puzzling to me is hanging on to all these Bush holdover prosecutors. I mean, they should have been wiped out from the very beginning and had new ones installed. I mean, that's exactly what that's what got us to a perverted justice system right now, is that when Karl Rove and Bush got into place, they started replacing the judges and prosecutors that we had with ones who would do their political bidding, not carry out justice, but do their political bidding and go on these witch hunts.
Oh, definitely.
What do you guys have on schedule next? I mean, we got the resolution out there, and we're talking about it. What's a good next move?
Well, yeah, we're coming up on the summer, so it's really difficult to organize college students during those months. You know, I know Patrick will be out of the country, I'll be out of the state, but we can really hit the ground running in the fall, and I think a good step to take would be to take up this mantle with college Democrats. Obviously, I'm not involved statewide anymore, so that wouldn't be my decision there, but at least at the chapter level. So we could try to bring more attention to this issue, especially as the Killing Atticus Finch documentary is nearing its close of production. That it'll be a lot easier to get the word out about it when people have something a little bit more tangible to see. And I think we could really make a push around this election to get Don out of prison.
Yes, and I want to encourage people, the bidding ends today. So if you want to bid on Governor Siegelman's prison shirt, last I heard the bidding was up to $15.25, I believe it was. That was this morning. But the bidding closes today, and these funds are going to be used in the completion of the documentary of Atticus versus the Architect.
I can't wait to that.
Okay, it's going to be super. And especially when people get to see these other people with R's behind their names talking about what an injustice that it was. But one day, I would love to see those ballots unsealed, the ones mm-hmm. that
Judge Pryor ordered sealed. I'd love to see those ballots unsealed.
Well, I think they destroyed those, didn't they? There was really a very intentional, very obvious cover up in Baldwin County. You know, it's very Bush v. Gore esque.
Yeah, and see that goes back to the State Department. If the State Department wanted to track those ballots down, I believe they could. If they used, like you said, a computer glitch, they might have burned physical documents, and they might have deleted and even wiped the hard drive clean, but anything ever put out there can be recovered. It just depends on if you have that type of government forensic computer specialist, they could probably get a hold of it. But then again, like I said, things are so bad that they probably wouldn't want to find it, because it's going to expose something very rotten at the Justice Department. It's going to be something that's kind of, you know, it will let the American people down. But we need to know that our government is willing to admit mistakes, and they're willing to hold people accountable for these type of acts that Karl Rove did by perverting the United States Justice Department. I mean, before Karl Rove arrived on the scene, Alabama, the Supreme Court was in the hands of Democrats. When he got finished, you know, look at it now. When you have Republicans in power, your government is going to suck. We're going through all types of things here. We are facing a total collapse of the Medicaid system here in Alabama. This is facing collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And I, for one, would like to see a full pardon, full expungement, whatever legal definition it is. I want to see Dunn come out and be eligible for run for political office all the way up to the highest we got. I don't want anything less than that. I want him out, but he deserves nothing less than a total full pardon, expungement, like it wiped clean, like it never happened.
I agree. Oh, I agree. Anything that Richard Nixon got, Don Siegelman more than deserves. I can promise you that.
Exactly. Okay, I'm going to play this little clip, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to give you guys both a chance to wrap up anything you want to say, give out any websites, shots, anything you want to do where people can get more information on this situation. Okay, it's about 5 minutes, and we'll be right back so we can wrap things up with Kyle Campbell and Patrick Fitzgerald.
There's also the more complicated case of former Democratic Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. Yes, I said Democratic Governor. Yes, I'm talking about that Alabama. But while he has managed to pull off the impossible-sounding feat of being elected governor of Alabama with a capital D next to his name, Siegelman's superhuman political powers were not enough to stop what just might have been the great buzzsaw of politically motivated prosecution. Don Siegelman was convicted of bribery in 2006 in a case prosecuted by a U.S. attorney with ties to Karl Rove. Governor Siegelman and others alleged that the case against him was in fact brought at the direction of Mr. Rove, working from the White House for political reasons. Now, how might that have happened? Well, here's the theory/allegation. Karl Rove had worked closely with a Republican consultant in Alabama by the name of Bill Canary. Bill Canary's wife, a woman by the name of Laura Canary, was the U.S. attorney put in charge of the case against Don Siegelman. Mr. Siegelman and an on-the-record whistleblower say this case of 2 degrees of separation, is not a coincidence. The new and potentially good news for the former governor and the former U.S. attorneys is that according to the official agreement between Karl Rove and Harriet Myers and the House Judiciary Committee, the U.S. attorney firings and the prosecution of Governor Siegelman will be fair game when Rove and Myers finally go up to Capitol Hill to testify. The agreement also indicates that the testimony should take place, quote, as soon as possible. It also says that Rove and Myers can only use the executive privilege shtick if someone asks a question about communications to or from the president. So, expect some news on the years-old prosecution of former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. Expect that news as soon as possible, whatever that may mean in the unknowable time zone that is Capitol Hill. Don Siegelman joins us now from Alabama. Due to a few technical difficulties, he's joining us just by phone. We just lost the video shot, but Governor, we are very grateful for having you on the show tonight. Thanks for joining us.
Well, Rachel, I look forward to joining you in studio sometime, but getting the truth out of Karl Rove is not going to be easy. It's not going to be pretty, and the American people are not going to be proud of what they see when the truth does finally come out.
Are you optimistic that this particular form of testimony by Karl Rove is going to be an appropriate venue for learning the truth about your case?
Well, Karl Rove is like a double-headed rattlesnake. You're going to have to back him into the corner before you get anything out of him. And just like an infected wound, the wound that has been created in this country by the subversion of our constitutional rights, the abuse of power, the use of the Department of Justice as a political weapon, this wound also has to be cleaned before the American people can feel safe about their democracy again. So getting at the truth is not going to be easy, and it's not going to be quick. And I think that rushing through this is not going to instill faith in the American people that we've done a good job. So I would encourage Congress to take their time and to look at other people who also can lay the foundation to put Karl Rove in check. There are other people. Karl Rove didn't fire these U.S. attorneys on his own. He didn't plot the prosecution of Democrats by himself. He didn't carry those acts out by himself. And so that's why I think that Congress needs to first subpoena, for example, in my case, they need to subpoena the telephone records and email communications between Karl Rove and the Attorney General of the state of Alabama, who started the investigation of me. They need to subpoena the records and emails and phone records of Bill Canary, the husband of the prosecutor, who is Karl Rove's closest friend in Alabama, so we can have some records on which to base some questions. Also, there are other people in Alabama who have knowledge of this prosecution. Those people should be brought before the committee and should be asked to tell the truth before under oath and under penalty of perjury.
Governor, I know that you are out on appeal right now. I know that you are convicting your 2006 conviction in that case. When you talk about subpoenaing the phone and email records between Karl Rove and the Attorney General of Alabama, subpoenaing the communications of Bill Canary, Karl Rove's associate from Alabama, who's very tightly tied to this case, are those strategies that you're pursuing in your own appeal as well?
No. My appeal is strictly based on the law. Most of the political ramifications of this case only came out subsequent to my being sentenced, handcuffed, shackled, and taken off to maximum security prison and put in solitary confinement. So for a crime the New York Times has said has never been considered a crime in America, and 54 former state attorneys general agreed that was not a crime. So the political implications of Karl Rove and others are not involved in the appeal of my case.
At what point in your case did you start to suspect that there might have been politics originating in the White House that affected why you were prosecuted, why those campaign contributions were pursued as prosecutable bribes in your case?
Well, as you know, I was not accused of taking a single penny of money. This is a very unusual case because there was This is a matter of a campaign contribution and my appointing the contributor to a non-paying board. The investigation started in 1999, immediately after I endorsed Al Gore for president. It was started by Karl Rove's client, who was the Attorney General of Alabama. It was kicked into high gear in 2001 by Karl Rove's best friend's wife, who was appointed by George Bush as his attorney. The case, I was brought to trial, as you may know, 1 month before my most recent re-election attempt,
by the wife of my opponent's campaign manager, again, Carl Rove's best friend, Bill Canary. So we suspected almost immediately that Carl Rove was involved, but some of the evidence that has come out subsequent to the conviction has you know, we have sworn testimony that Carl Rove was involved in the prosecution.
Former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, people across the country will be boning up on your case in the advance of Carl Rove's testimony in Capitol Hill, which is anticipated sometime in the next few weeks or at least the next couple of months. Good luck to you, sir, and thank you for coming on the show to talk with us about it tonight.
Yes, we've been talking with Kyle Campbell and Patrick Fitzgerald about the Don Siegelman case and the resolution that was passed in the Senate of the University of Alabama seeking Don's freedom. Okay, guys, could you give us information where people can contact you or any organization that you're working with dealing with Don Siegelman and Democrats? Or any events that you know that's coming up that would be good for grassroots people to try to get involved in? Let's have Patrick, could you go first?
Sure, absolutely. You know, what we're really going to try and do from this point going forward, I think really making sure that this is led from College Democratic chapters and also SGAs across the state of Alabama to start. And so what I would suggest, it's very easy to get in touch with the Alabama College Democrats. You know, we're on all social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever it may be. Reach out to us if you want more information. Reach out to us if you want to get involved whenever we really start ramping things back up in the fall like we will. And I think from there, we're really going to continue to build.
So, Cal,
I agree. Sure, yeah. If you are interested in any of these, or in this issue in particular, or really any issue, the best way, you know, if you want to change something, you know, people always say write your congressman, write your legislature. That's true. But if you'd like to see this brought up, or any issue brought up at the College Democrats level, we really appreciate when people tweet things in at us. At UA Democrats is the University of Alabama's chapter Twitter. At AL College Dems is the State of Alabama College Democrats chapter's Twitter, or right on our Facebook walls for either of those pages, either University of Alabama College Democrats or whatever chapter. All of our chapters have Facebook pages, or just Alabama College Democrats for the state. You know, social media is the best way to engage, I think, for the most part with young people. And if any issue you ever want brought, you know, we're already on top of this one, and I think we're going to have a great year in advocacy for the governor. But if you ever want any issue brought to our attention, something that you think that we should be talking about that we're not right now, just go ahead and get in touch with us somehow. You can always get in touch with me, Kyle Campbell, or Patrick Fitzgerald personally as well. But these pages on social media, Twitter and Facebook specifically, are a great way to get us to talk about any particular issue that is on your mind.
Okay, that's great. I want to shout out a few people. Shouts out to Congresswoman Terry Sewell. Shouts out to Pam Miles, of course, one of the first mentors I had in politics. And shouts out to Clint Brown, Roger Shuler. And a special shout-out to Andrew Craig at the Justice Integrity Project based out of Washington, D.C., who's also has an interest in this case. Shouts-out to Scott Horton. And shouts-out to Jill Simpson for being a brave lady because, like the intro said, after she came out and told what she knew, you know, she had her house mysteriously burned. I think she's been ran off the road, and they have tried to destroy her professional career so she wouldn't have any income. So shouts out to all these brave people, and shouts out to Sharon Williams, and shouts out to the Free Don Siegelman movement, and shouts out to Don Siegelman's family who had to endure all of this pain. You guys want to shout anybody out?
I think you might covered a lot of the bases there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I really appreciate having you guys on, and just to let you know, I'm in this Don Siegelman thing. I've been in it for a minute, and you are always welcome to come back. If you had any, have any information you want to update us or any event that you're having, let me know. I'm also the online manager for HuntsvilleBlack.com, so if you have any events, feel free to come on there and let us know, and we'll continue to help get the word out.
Yes, sir. I really appreciate you having us on the show. It's been great talking with you, and I look forward to doing it again in the future.
Yeah, I look forward to having you guys. I'm going to end the show with one of my favorite Sigelman compilations. And I'll talk to you guys soon. And thanks for everything you're doing. Free Don Sigelman.
Free Don. Yes, sir. Thank you. Free Don.
We begin our show with a man who the American Trial Lawyer magazine calls America's political prisoner number one. That's Don Siegelman, the former governor of Alabama who returns to federal prison today to resume his 6.5-year sentence. He was convicted on bribery charges stemming from his appointment of a campaign donor to a non-paying government board. However, his supporters say his only crime was belonging to the Democratic Party in a state with a Republican majority. Siegelman's supporters say he was the target of a political witch hunt, in part orchestrated by former Bush administration deputy Karl Rove. They claim the federal prosecutors and presiding judge decided to destroy Siegelman's career. Siegelman was once touted as a possible Democratic presidential candidate. In Alabama, he served in 4 of the state's top elected offices. He was governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, and secretary of state. Siegelman's supporters already include 100 former state attorney general, both Republicans and Democrat, as well as former presidential candidates Al Gore and John Kerry. Last week, he actually attended the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, not as a politician or candidate, but as a man seeking a presidential pardon. Pace Law Professor Bennett Gershman says Siegelman's case is, quote, one of the most egregiously bad faith prosecutions by the Justice Department ever. Siegelman's already served over 9 months in prison, a month in solitary confinement, 3 weeks in a maximum security prison. He now has to report back to federal prison in Oakdale, Louisiana, by this afternoon.
They were wrong.
Well, the corruption charges are absurd. I was running in 1999, was running a campaign to establish a lottery in Alabama so we could send all of our kids, poor kids, needy kids, to college for free. I was raising money for this, for the television campaign to convince people to vote for the lottery. One of the people I asked to raise money was this Fortune 500 CEO. He raised $500,000. Later, I reappointed him to the same non-paying part-time board on which he had served through 3 previous governors. I was the 4th governor to appoint this same guy to this same board. There was the only testimony that sent me to prison was that of a felon, a crook, as described by 60 Minutes, who basically sold his testimony so he could stay out of jail. He was facing 40 to 100 years in prison. The government said, make us a deal. We want to make a bigger corruption case against Siegelman. If you tell us what we need to know, we'll recommend no time in prison for you. And that's what he did. The other thing,
I
received a penny of the money myself. It all went to support the education lottery concept. The other thing that convicted me is that the judge and I had a political battle going on for 10 years, but anyway, that's another story. But he didn't like me. But then he set the bar so low for the jury that they could have convicted anybody of anything. He said that they could convict me by inference, that they could infer that there was a deal made, not that there had to be one proven, not by an express agreement or an explicit agreement, but they could infer that there was a deal. And that's why we have 113 state attorneys general, the top law professors, and even George Will speaking out saying this is a dangerous precedent. Because if prosecutors can pick and choose the targets they want to silence, then anybody, as George Will said, is at peril if they participate in politics. So, you know, one of the reasons why my spirit is still high and pumped is that that I know that the Supreme Court eventually is going to get this right. But the other reason, Jake, is that this case is not just about me. But, you know, this is Karl Rove's revenge. Karl Rove is politics by indictment. He took over the Department of Justice, appointed people he wanted as U.S. prosecutors, and set them on a path to destroy people that he didn't want to see, rise to the top. And I'm not the only one that got shot down, but I am being held up as an example of it. But,
right.
You know, it's
I wanted to jump in there to just make one quick point about something you were just saying. The Republican U.S. attorney in New Mexico said that Karl Rove pressured him to bring cases on voter fraud. And he said he investigated, and found absolutely no cases. And Karl Rove insisted that he bring cases anyway.
But look at what Karl Rove did to Don Siegel. God, this is a story. They're going to show it on 60 Minutes this weekend. I'm going to TiVo. You should all watch it, too. He was the governor of Alabama, and what they did to him is a crime, okay? That man is sitting in jail right now. Karl Rove targeted Don Siegelman because he thought he's an up-and-coming star in the Democratic Party, and we have to destroy him. Now, there's a Republican operative that has come out, talked to 60 Minutes, saying Karl Rove wanted to get Siegelman under any and all conditions, to the point where she asked and Karl Rove asked her to see if she can get naked pictures of him or pictures of him having an affair.
Wow.
And she looked and looked and looked and said, you know what? The problem is, he's not having an affair. I can't get naked pictures of him because he isn't naked. I can't get pictures of him having an affair because he isn't having an affair. And then Karl Rove went to another tack. And get a load of this quote from her, okay? This is Jill Simpson, by the way, a Republican operative in Alabama. And I'm getting this from 60 Minutes. But the case goes far beyond lurid photos. Simpson, the GOP operative, alleged in a sworn statement to the House Judiciary Committee last year that, quote, she heard a close associate of Rove say that White House political advisor had spoken with the Department of Justice about pursuing Don Siegelman, a former Democratic governor of Alabama, with help from two Alabama U.S. attorneys. Siegelman was later indicted on 32 counts of corruption, convicted on 7 of them, and is currently serving an 88-month sentence in federal prison.
Wow.
They went to go get him with U.S. attorneys that were tainted, that they purposely put in there to pursue political pursuits and political goals. Karl Rove is a bad player, okay? And this is criminal. What they did to Don Siegelman, the former governor of Alabama, is criminal. The man is in jail now. And I've read about this case before, and what they convicted him on was horse crap. They wouldn't let him defend himself because they picked a conservative judge who said, oh, yeah, that stuff, no, that's inadmissible. Your defense is inadmissible. We're going to just only allow the evidence that these U.S. attorneys handpicked by Karl Rove have got. I mean, look, this isn't theoretical. This isn't just politics. This isn't, you know, the U.S. attorney scandal. Oh, we got them and they got us and stuff like that. They actually went to destroy people's lives, and they did
James,
to Don Siegel.
This isn't new, man. This happened throughout the 90s, throughout the Clinton presidency. People were, you know, had to lawyer up. They were being sued. They were being put in jail. People spent time in jail who didn't do anything.
That's absolutely true.
And it's been going on.
So, when you tell me that you're going to stop this bickering, I wish you a lot of luck. But how are you going to stop the Karl Rove of this world from coming to destroy you? Okay, so you better be prepared. And I think he is prepared. I hope he's prepared. But don't get naive on me. And lastly, the media. Come on. Look, 60 Minutes is doing a good job of covering this story. But how do you look at this and go, oh, 50-50? It's not 50-50. They're the bad